This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Sometimes in journalism, we say half-jokingly that three make a trend. That much is probably debatable, but what about six? That's the number of Massachusetts state troopers who have been struck roadside while doing their job since the 4th of July. In the most serious incident, Sergeant Douglas Whittleton was struck and killed in the breakdown lane of I-95 in Mansfield. This past Sunday, an allegedly drunk driver ran over Trooper Paul Guilford's foot on the side of the road in New Bedford. At least five of these six late-night incidents have been blamed on alcohol. But you can't just pin it on the booze, says Rick Brown of the State Police Union.
How many more troopers have to get hit before people realize that this has to be taken seriously? Pay attention, slow down. If you can move over, please move over to the next lane. Give our people that extra 12 to 14 feet to do their job.
In other words, Massachusetts drivers, follow the state's move over law. That sounds simple enough, and yet it's not happening. So listeners, what do you think is going on here? Careless driving? Drunk driving? Or just a fact of life when part of your job involves standing roadside with thousands of cars streaming past you at 60, 70, 80 miles per hour? And I just have to put it out there, is the bigger problem here really that Massachusetts drivers are just plain bad? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also, as always, comment online at wbur.org/Boston. Joining us now is Tom Vanderbilt. His recent feature in the Boston Globe Ideas section is headlined Trooper Down, Why Drivers Hit Officers on the Side of the Road. He's also author of the best-selling book Traffic, Why We Drive, The Way We Drive, and What It Says About Us. Tom Vanderbilt, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Meghna. Great to be here.
Well, the first culprit you mentioned in your Globe Ideas article was the one that may be easiest to understand, and that is, of course, alcohol. But I was really shocked by the number that you dug up regarding the number of people on the road at night who may be driving under the influence. How many is that?
Well, that came from a study by The Economist, Stephen Levitt and Jack Porter. Stephen Levitt, of course, author of the book Freakonomics. But they did sort of an interesting experiment to figure out how to estimate something like this. How can you go out and really figure out how many people on the roads might be intoxicated other than standing on the side of the road and asking drivers? But they basically looked at collisions in which there were two drunk drivers that hit one another and then used that as what they call sort of an induced exposure mechanism to make this larger estimate. They came to the finding that about 25% of drivers between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. on a Saturday or a Sunday morning were intoxicated.
A quarter of the people. That's amazing. But, you know, in the case of the Massachusetts state troopers who have been hit, many of them were hit by allegedly drunk drivers. But you also say that there's a bigger issue here, and that it just is sort of the visibility of police and state troopers on the side of the road. You'd think that with those bright lights and their sirens and their well-marked cars, that people would be able, sober people, I should say, would be able to see that there's an officer on the side of the road. So why are they getting hit?
It's a complicated and mysterious thing that people have been looking into for years now, and there's still a number of competing explanations. The first, of course, is the drunk driver, and I've seen many cases where a drunk driver has struck an officer who has actually pulled over a drunk driver, so it just speaks to the volume of that problem. But there's any number of other issues, and some of the people I talk to, you know, sheer visibility is not so much often the problem. You know, as you say, these lights are flashing. We know what police cars look like. Our drivers have a sixth sense to spot them far away and react to their presence. But one issue, for example, is the trooper inside of the car or are they outside of the car? If they're outside of the car, that presents a whole other range of issues. For example, drivers may be looking at the lights, and the lights themselves might almost be a distracting mechanism. And the thing about pedestrians, if you ask the average person how far away do you think a driver can see you, that answer is always very optimistic. Drivers really have very little visibility of pedestrians at night, much less so than pedestrians think they do. So troopers, you know, there's been a movement to have some of them wear more high visibility outfits, retroreflective striping on themselves as well. And in fact, after the article was written, someone got in touch with me and was come with former police officers with a new product called, I believe, Bright Strike. These were gloves officers could wear that had sort of reflecting mechanisms in the glove to help sort of One thing we're very sensitive to as humans is the profile of a human. So if you see something sort of in the darkness and it looks like a human person standing there, we're going to pick that out very easily.
Okay, so let me ask you. You mentioned the profile of a human and also whether or not people can see. The lights themselves may be distracting. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us, and I want to go to them in just a moment. But about this issue of the lights, you mentioned this thing called the moth effect. Now, what is that?
That's this bit of sort of lore, and it's debated, and there's been a little bit of work on it, and it's still debated to this day. But, for example, I was out doing research in California on a week that some troopers were hit, and the troopers were saying, you know, the drunks just seem to veer toward our lights as if they were moths attracted to a flame. And the scientific theory is phototaxis, it's called. But it's pretty clear that that's not what's happening. What might be happening is another issue that has been shown in some driving simulator studies in which people tended to steer ever so slightly in the direction in which they were looking.
Huh.
And this is something that race car drivers anecdotally will talk about. If you need to look where you want to go. This is something they teach you in sort of advanced driving schools. But again, these were only a few small driving simulator studies with a few subjects. This is one of the problems with driving. There's a lot of questions out there that still haven't been fully answered because there's so many people on the roads and it's tough to do these experiments in actual driving.
Interesting. We're talking about Massachusetts driving and why troopers are so apt, at least recently, to get hit on the side of the road. There's some counterintuitive research out there, which we'll get to in a moment, that says maybe dangerous roads might actually be safer. Tom Vanderbilt is our guest. He's author of Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us. And you can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Kim is calling from Duxbury. Welcome to Radio Boston, Kim.
Thank you. I'd just like to add, you know, with the conversation that many times on roads, especially in Duxbury, where there are no street lights, that if there is a police car that's pulled over to the side with his bright lights flashing, you cannot see if somebody's in the car, out of the car, especially with, let's say, the aging population that may be night blind. You cannot see what is happening, and I've actually stopped and like, I'm sorry, I cannot see you. Do you realize it's dangerous? Somebody's going to get hit.
You know, Kim, I'm sorry, Kim, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I was going to say I've experienced the same thing because sometimes it's not just the police officer's lights, but even the oncoming headlights of some, new cars with their bright halogens. It seems to obscure everything. So thank you so much for your call. Tom Vanderbilt, I mean, what do you say about that? There are physical limitations to how much, flashing lights and brightness that drivers can actually deal with at night on the roads.
Yeah, I mean, I myself suffer from a bit of night myopia. I really actually don't like to drive at night. But, I mean, this is why these so-called move-over laws have been passed because you don't quite know what's going to be happening at the scene of a roadside emergency. And I should add that it's not only police officers who are getting struck. It's ambulance, tow truck operators, construction people. And so it's common sense, but, slow down, move over to the extent that you can, eliminate the risk that something is going to happen as much as possible. I mean, even accounting for those visibility questions. And there are limits. And you talk about the new headlights of cars. This is another – we could spend a whole show on this. But this is something – trying to find that optimal balance between what the driver wants to see and blinding the opposite driver. This is something that again, is a source of great controversy. And NHTSA, the federal agency, spent about 5 years looking into this and question and eventually – decided to do nothing. But again, one of these road mysteries.
So another one of those mysteries is sort of human behavior in and of itself. And you write that with, say, the rooftop rack lights that police cars are all now equipped with, things like that, it's made officers potentially feel even safer. So maybe they themselves may act in a less safe manner when they're pulling people over on the side of the road. But you extend that theory sort of more broadly to how we drive in general, that as safety in cars and on the way roads are designed, as these things get more and more safety-minded and we feel more comfortable, that actually reduces our driving skill. It makes us worse drivers. Now, why is that?
Well, there's a theory that psychologists talk about called risk compensation, and we've seen it in all sorts of things with skydivers, for example, when they came up with a new technology to reduce accidental chutes not opening. What did divers do? They just took more risks and tried to get closer to the ground before they let that cord rip. So, when something feels safer to us, we tend to take more risks. It's been shown in a number of capacities, and including with driving, with things like anti-lock brakes. And as you get the modern car, which is quiet, it's well-insulated, it feels very powerful. The brakes work very well. It gets harder to kind of relate to that outside environment, mm-hmm. and we just take amp up the risks a little bit more. So there's a counter theory to that, which is to make some driving feel riskier than it really is. Or the idea here is to make it feel risky without actually raising the risk.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about that because, mm-hmm. I mean, one of those places where I don't feel terribly safe behind the wheel is on roundabouts. And there are a lot of them here in the Boston area. One of my favorite ones is there's a big one off Morrissey Boulevard where I've been around it like 500 times and can't get off. But that's another story entirely. But you say that roundabouts are one of those things that that kind of work into this psychology of driving. How is that?
Yeah, I mean, this may shock some people, but if we just started building roundabouts tomorrow like there was no end, it would actually make driving much safer in the U.S. It's been estimated that if we were to have as many roundabouts as Australia, we would need about 150,000. We have about 2,000 right now. And Australia, I should add, is much better traffic safety record than we do currently. So the idea, though, simply is that at a four-way signalized intersection with traffic lights like we're all used to, there's 32 places, what engineers call conflict, where you can actually run into another vehicle. One of these is one of the most dangerous things in driving is the left turn across oncoming traffic. You have cars that are often moving quite a high rate of speed. You're trying to judge just how far away they are, how fast they are. Are they going to stop for the yellow? Number of different complex decisions to be made there. And I should add that when you're struck on the side, that is one of the weakest parts of the car, that mm-hmm. so-called T-bone collision. So roundabouts, though, you know, it drops the number of those conflicts to fewer than 16, and everyone has to sort of enter the roundabout slowly. The average speed in a modern roundabout is about 15 miles an hour. So you might get more crashes when one of these is first put in, but there'll be very minor crashes, fender benders, and you know I think most people would trade those for the loss of a human life.
I see. So you may be experiencing a National Lampoon European Vacation moment where you go around the roundabout 500 times looking at the Eiffel Tower, but you're safe doing it at least. Let's get some more calls in here. Andrew's calling from Sudbury. Welcome to Radio Boston, Andrew.
Hi, I'm actually calling from my office in Boston. I wanted to point out, I'm 60, I came into Massachusetts when I was 18 to go to college, and I grew up in New York. And I've had a long opportunity to observe Massachusetts drivers. I would have to say that I think that the situation of police officers being hit is complicated by the fact that Massachusetts drivers in general, I think, have a much greater percentage of unsafe, dangerous, careless, me-first drivers than most other states. I've actually seen situations in broad daylight where drivers just won't get out of the way of ambulances or police vehicles or emergency vehicles because they're more interested in me first than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a mentality in this state and particularly in the Boston area that you just want to get out of the way.
Andrew, thank you so much for your call. I hear a lot of decades worth of pent-up frustration behind the wheel there from your voice. And actually, I was looking up some surveys about Massachusetts driving in particular, and GMAC, the insurance company, they do an annual survey of knowledge of rules of the road. And in 2006, Massachusetts ranked 48th, essentially two from the bottom in knowledge of rules for the road. In 2009 or 2010, I believe we crawled our way up to 41. So we're getting a little better. But Tom Vanderbilt, is part of the issue here just the culture of driving in the state? And how is it that cultures of driving really vary as wildly as Andrew's pointing out from place to place?
I think it's absolutely right. And, of course, I live in New York, which that same survey found to have the country's least qualified drivers. We had the lowest knowledge. So coming to Massachusetts is a bit of a refresher for me, which will sound probably shocking to people. But I should also add that Massachusetts does have this reputation for really aggressive driving. Statistically, it's the safest place to drive in the U.S. per mile driven. I know that's going to – the phones are probably going to light up, but something that often surprises people. But I think in general, you know, on the eastern seaboard, it's a denser driving environment. There's more people fighting for fewer, you know, sort of road space. And there's a general, I think, wave belt of aggression from Connecticut to New York to Massachusetts. But I think across the board, driving in the last few decades, and this is sort of borne out by surveys where someone would literally look at one intersection, one particular place in traffic, and chart behavior. Did people use their signals? And they find this progressive decline in people using their signals, which is, number one, it's polite, but it also, you know, signaling your attention to other drivers is something that helps traffic work safely. So as to a theory as to why this is happening, I mean, either people are distracted by their cell phones or something like that, or we might see this kind of wider increase in what's been essentially termed narcissism. If you look at these surveys conducted over that same time, you ask people, college students, a question like, if I ruled the world, it would be a better place. Each year, more people answer yes to that question. So I think we're all getting a little bit more, you know, sort of egotistical, and the road is a – the car is a perfect vehicle for that expression. It's sort of a MySpace, if you will. We're kind of locked inside there, cut off from the world, and – it's harder to relate to other people or act kindly.
We have a lot of people who have some pretty strong thoughts about this, and I want to get to as many callers as I can in the last few minutes here. So let's roll through a bunch of them. Christian is calling from Brighton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Christian.
Hi, Magna. How are you?
Doing well.
Question slash comment, which is I drive around a lot, and I see on the road just kind of all day long at different traffic stops, and I'm just wondering if they take into account, like, the attitude of the cop against the driver. I mean, he should be able to see the car coming down the road and get out of the way, I would think. But is he just jumping into the road trying to make the guy stop and then getting hit, or is it something of that sort?
I see, Christian. And you cut off there for a bit in your phone, but your question was that you see more police on the road than there used to be. Each situation in the past six of the state troopers being hit has been different from one another, but they've all been, if I understand correctly, on the side of the road already, having pulled over a driver and dealing with that situation when they've been hit. Let's get another call. Zach's calling from Andover. Welcome to Radio Boston, Zach.
Hey, Magna. I just wanted to bring up a point about bad driving and culture. I was just in Europe a little while ago, and just the driving culture in Europe is so completely different. I know, as far as driver training goes, in Finland, they have about a two-year driver training with required time on a skid pan before you can even get your license. And I just wanted to bring that up as a possible reason why Massachusetts and American drivers in general are so hazardous on the road.
I don't think any. Do you think anyone here would actually be willing to wait for 2 years to go through driver training before they get their license, Zach? I mean, is that realistic in the United States?
Well, having gone through driver training myself, I probably would have been kind of annoyed if they made me wait for 2 years. But I mean, if they gave us time on the skid pan, time to actually practice what we're doing, so that we know what to do in emergency situations, I think it would have been a lot more involved and a lot better for everyone else.
Okay, Zach, thank you so much for your call. Bob is on the line from East Boston. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bob.
Thank you.
What's your thought today?
This is what I have to say. The problem isn't the drunks, etc. The problem are the cops. The state police training should try to get some more intelligent people. Every time I look at these guys, they look like they're fat, lazy, and not too smart.
But that doesn't mean they should get hit by on the side of the road. They're not in the lane, Bob.
If I may, but there are things that they can do so that they won't be.
Gotcha.
And it takes a little bit of intelligence, and it takes a little bit of non-laziness. They should park their car at least 40 yards behind and walk up. They should park their car so that it's farther out from the street than the guy that stops. They should wear some kind of lighting system if they have to, or with some of these guys, anything would help. But they don't do it because they're too lazy.
Bob, thank you so much for your call. We just got a minute and a half here left, Tom Vanderbilt. You've heard from a lot of Massachusetts drivers. You know, my question is, it is terrible that there have been these six accidents regarding state troopers on the side of the road. They're not the only ones who pull over, though. I mean, the breakdown lane is there for people who break down as well. So, you know, from your study on driving behavior, the technologies that we can use, do you have any suggestions, you know, that we can incorporate today every time we get behind the wheel to make the experience safer?
Unfortunately, the technology is really in the human brain. I think a lot of people have been implicating the police here, but the problem really is with the driver. I mean, these police are in the middle of executing their job, trying to make the roads safer for people that are out there. And I should add, you mentioned the breakdown lane. I mean, a lot of average sort of civilian drivers are killed out there every year while doing something like trying to change a tire or simply waiting for emergency response because they're struck by those same other drivers who have trouble sort of staying out of that lane. So, again, just common sense. You see something going wrong on the side of the road, just pull over. And similar thing applies to bicycles. I always try to give the rule in many states is the law is 3 feet passing zone. I try to give 6 or 8. I think it's just courtesy when possible to not knock them over in a gust of wind as you're traveling by. And just, you know, exercise common sense. There's no silver bullet technologically.
Well, you know what they say about common sense, though. Not terribly common. Tom Vanderbilt, author of Traffic, Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us. And he also had a recent article in the Boston Globe called Trooper Down. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, the newly named editor of the Boston Herald joins us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.